Welcome to the Rethinking Logistics podcast. My name is Christopher Wall, and I'm the founder of Zeus Logics, a digital customs brokerage. With us today is Lars Jensen of C Intelligence and my co-founder, Roger Crook. And we're going to discuss how logistics is changing and what we can expect from digitalization. Very often when we hear about people adopting digital technology, there's some consternation about, will it be the panacea that will solve everything, or will things be inflexible to change? Are there clear limits in terms of what digital technology can help us accomplish? And when does the human touch need to be brought back into the loop to do the kind of problem solving that machines simply can't do?
Yeah, you're touching on something that's extremely important. That might just be me who have a biased view, I don't know, but the way I see it is large parts of the shipping industry right now appear somewhat to have blinders on or are too short-sighted, proceeding on a digital path from the perspective that if I really digitize and do it well, I will have a competitive advantage. The way I see it is nothing could be further from the truth. The way I see it is the digital path is a necessary ticket to stay in the game. If you don't do it, you're going to be out. But if you do it, you will have an efficient operation, low-cost operation to handle everything when everything goes according to plan. Where the human touch comes in and where the real competitive advantage lies in the future is, and what do you then do if you have exceptions? Those can be both positive and negative. You have the negative exceptions when something does not go according to plan. The truck ran off the road, what are you going to do? Or the containers blew overboard, or whatever all these million things are that you cannot necessarily automate, where it really makes a difference whether you have a skilled operator to help find your plan B, C, and D. But also the positive exceptions, when a customer comes about and says, well, I actually need to have I need to have 17 giraffes shipped from Botswana to Brazil. Can you help me with that? I mean, that's never going to be automated to start with. And how do you then put together a solution for these special requirements? And you've got millions of special requirements as well. So if you see digitalization as a path to competitive advantage, you've lost the plot. It's the ticket to stay in the game. Your advantage is actually in your people, but you need to get your people on top of realizing, instead of spending 90% of your time supporting the normal process, you need to get to the point where you spend 0% of your time supporting the normal process and 100% of your time on the value-adding parts, which lies outside the normal process.
It's interesting. When we have been building the Zeus Customs Entry tool, that's exactly the way we've looked at this. There's simple routine rote work, document collection, sharing updates with your customer or other people in the freight forwarding landscape. Those you can automate. But when customs comes back and says something to the effect of, we believe you've misclassified these goods because the description of the good has changed, explain to us why that is in fact the correct classification. And if you can't do that well, then you're going to have to go and seek a binding ruling from customs, allowing you to call that particular piece under one certain specific HTS code. Those simply don't seem to be things that you can resolve with technology because they're too open-ended. They don't follow any predictable past model where you could try and extract the broken down operational procedure or deal with a one-way interaction. When you send somebody a status update, they receive the update and that's the end of it and they're usually happy. But in the situation where you had your 17 giraffes come in, if all of a sudden giraffes are deemed unimportable into Brazil, you're going to have somebody figure out how to solve that problem manually. I'm still trying to get the image of 17 giraffes going on a ship to Brazil together.
You might want to take your 40-foot container and put it on the high side.
Yes, I agree. I mean, there are definitely limits. And it's the 80-20 rule. 80% can be digitalized. But as you say, specials can't be. When things go wrong, it can't be fixed with digital. When specials need to be done, like the giraffes, you can't do it on a digital basis. But digital can cope with volume growth, and it can cope with a lot of the volume that's operating today, and particularly for some specific customer segments. But when a shipment, like an e-commerce shipment return, goes wrong, people want the human touch. They want to be sure that if their shipment doesn't arrive or it's damaged, that they can talk to somebody to feel confident about that they're going to get a refund or they're going to get a replacement because they get nervous. But I think digital can, as Lars said as well, digital can help organizations to reduce cost and improve productivity on the one hand. It can get them in the game. It's essential to survive. And organizations that can adapt technology can and change processes and integrate tech as fast as possible will survive. But other people that, or companies that don't change and don't adapt technology, they're the ones who are going to lose any advantage that they had. And they will eventually die because they probably can't rely just on the human touch. They have to adapt and adopt some technology capability.
And maybe also just to lend a slight more comment on that, because there's always a tendency to talk about digitalization as if it's black and white, either you can or you cannot. But there's an equally important discussion that should be, should you? Because I could also argue that if we go back to my ridiculous example with the giraffes, could we automate that? Of course you could. You just sit down and program a routine specifically for shipping those giraffes. But that would not be cost efficient in the slightest little bit. And that's also a consideration that sometimes is missing from the whole digital debate, that there are elements that, sure, you could digitize it, but maybe you shouldn't. Maybe the cost benefit case is just not there because you're introducing a level of complexity into your programming that's going to trip you up later on down the path.
Indeed. So that brings about another question. What types of organizations do you think are most likely to be able to benefit and adapt to a change to a digitally based business? And what kinds are simply going to have difficulty ever adapting, or what kinds may not need to adapt? Maybe the specialized giraffe shipper does not need to adapt in the same way, but other organizations, if they don't adapt, will simply fall by the wayside.
I don't think there are any organizations that are inherently behind on that curve. I mean, let's take two extreme examples. You can have extremely large organizations that already have fairly good process control. For them, it would be relatively easy to go full digital on the main process. Their challenge will be, how do we ensure that our people are really good at dealing with the exceptions? Because they're normally spending their time on the normal process. The opposite end of the curve, you might have very small organizations with virtually zero process control. Everything is done ad hoc. For them, the challenge will be getting the systems processes in place because that's a structured mindset they don't have, but they will still completely excel on the side of how do we deal with the exceptions. So I don't think there are any companies or organizations that are inherently worse off, but they will face different challenges in the adoption process.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, many organizations have a lot of legacy systems still. They haven't moved to ERP or they haven't moved to more sophisticated technology. And a lot of it is resistance to change from, some of it is because technology doesn't fit the process exactly, as Lars says, because there are so many specials. So technology can do 70, 80% of because it's standard. But as soon as you get outside the standard, the technology doesn't work for the specials. And if the specials are a large portion of an organization's business, then adopting the technology is very difficult. So you've really got two issues. One is organizational change from a people perspective, because we all don't like to change that fast. And secondly, because if an organization has a lot of specials in their system, then they can't get those specials to fit into the technology. I think there are also some smaller companies that don't have the capital to be able to make the change, and they don't see the benefits of making the change. And therefore, these are also the ones that potentially will suffer in the future, maybe through a shakeout or just because they become uncompetitive, because they can't provide the customer with the information that the customer requires. And at the end of the day, a lot of digital is also not only just to help improve cost and productivity in the organization, it's also to be able to help the customer and the shipper to be able to manage their supply chain in a better way. Because at the end of the day, the logistics operator is essentially an outsourced part of a company's supply chain. And therefore, they need to be able to fit in with that supply chain and provide the information that's required by that company to operate that supply chain. There's a number of benefits, but also some organizations will really suffer if they don't do technology change in the longer term.
One of the ramifications there, especially if you look at the people side, is also how are you going to train people? Because today, this is a very practical industry. A lot of this, that's on-the-job training. You start out in a job, and because 80, 90% of the job is just the normal process, that means you are gradually learning how do I then handle the stuff that is slightly out of the process. Now, fast forward, say, 5, 10 years down the line, the normal process is fully automated. How do we then train the people? Because they will only see the exceptions. I mean, I think a mental picture of this would be, do you want to ski down Mount Everest? If I take a guy who has never been skiing in his life and drop him on Mount Everest with a pair of skis, that's not really going to go all that well, because he needs to start on the baby slopes and gradually learn the skills. But mentally speaking, this is the challenge we're going to face when we have completely automated the normal process, because he will not get on the baby slopes. He will only get the Mount Everest right off the bat. How do we train people for this?
Yes, that's been a consistent industry problem, because you're going to have highly educated and trained experts to be able to interface with the problems. But it does make sense that they will just have less practical experience of how things worked out. That's an interesting problem I had not even begun to think about. Wow. So I guess shifting gears a little bit, there is the notion of data portability and automation and the link in between data portability and automation. By data portability, I mean, for example, being able to use information that was input and taken from a carrier that was maybe input into a forwarder system, and then being able to reuse that information in some kind. It would need to be in a structured data format so that you could, for example, prepare export documents and import documents for customs clearance. How are you seeing the impact of data portability and its adoption occurring? Are people doing this? Is this something people know they have to do?
To some degree, people know they have to do it. I think it's positive to see an initiative like the Digital Container Shipping Association on the carrier side, where at least they sat down and realized we need to have some data standards, because data standards is also a prerequisite for having portability amongst the different stakeholders. You're not going to get to the point where every single stakeholder in the entire supply chain can agree on exactly the same data standards for everything. Their worlds are too far apart, but you need to know what is in the virtual container, so to speak, between the different handover points. You can argue that should we have had these standards in place 20 years ago? Of course we should. The fact just is we haven't. On the carrier side, I mean, this is all the way down to at least finally, we are getting alignment across the container lines in terms of what does it mean that the vessel has arrived? What does that timestamp actually mean? So it's something as basic as that. So the negative side is this should have been in place for decades, but it hasn't. But at least now we are getting that in place. So they're getting the standards. Where we are not yet is I'm still anxiously awaiting of seeing once the carriers have agreed on these, which they have to some degree, when have they actually implemented it in practice?
Yeah, from my perspective, the industry is a long way from data portability. They want it. They recognize it. They want standards. But if you look at examples, EDI messaging protocol took years and years and years to get alignment and agreement and to make it easy for logistics operators to integrate with customers or to other suppliers. Barcode labeling protocol was another example. Getting a standard barcode could, in a lot of cases, there isn't a standard. Everybody uses the same standard. And I think that's also why you haven't seen, one of the other areas I would look at is in air freight. We talked about open cargo and doing booking for air freight shipments. One of the reasons why digital technology has been slow to come up with solutions for booking air freight is because of airlines operating on different protocols and different systems, but not operating on a standard. You know, I think that it will happen, but I think it's going to be very slow to get one standard, and maybe you're going to have a few standards.
One thing that I think also stays forgotten when we talk about standards is there's a stakeholder out there that basically we don't control. That stakeholder are national authorities. where there is not really any realistic way that the industry can mandate to, say, customs authorities or veterinary authorities exactly how should they do their standards. We will still, no matter what we do, have a world where there are 200 different governments around the world. So in principle, you can still end up with 200 different standards for part of the documentation chain. And we need to have setups that are sufficiently flexible to take that into account.
It's interesting, when we started thinking about data portability and how we could bring that about, we looked towards the governmental authorities as being a source of portable data standards. If you're making a customs entry into the United States, for example, there's certain pieces of information that always have to be collected. They have to be formatted in certain ways. And the government publishes those details, and everybody has to adhere to that if they want to import things into the US. So any single time we have an import transaction coming in or an export documentation being filed, I now know, for example, that the weight of the goods will always be in kilos rather than the old the standard system in the US or the imperial system in the UK. I know that time dates and stamps will be done in 24-hour format. I know that currency has to be done according to a certain format. So this forced standardization, which occurs 35 million times a year just in the US, 35 million transactions, generates a certain standard group of information that you have and you can reuse. So it's been, paradoxically, they've not been willing to join a standards organization, but then again, they've just declared the standards unilaterally. And there's no way to really, there's no way around that. So we've been seeing that as a competitive advantage as we try and take information out of the customs process and reutilize it in other parts. Because our users will always know if something was declared to have arrived at a certain time, there might be some ambiguity as to what that means. But if customs tells you that they released the goods at a very, very given specific time, you have a timestamp of that down to the second, and you know what it means because there's a definition of what a customs cleared good means.
But this is where I might want to challenge you a little bit, but because to me, what you have explained there has nothing to do with standards, or rather it does and it doesn't. Because here's where I see this schism also going forward. From a country perspective, as you explained, the US authorities can, for example, say, this is how we want it. It's uniform. It's exactly this format. Seen from a US perspective, it is a standard. But seen from a global supply chain perspective, we still have then 200 different standards across 200 different countries. And the challenge here is national rules are set by national governments, which by definition, of course, look at what are the interests of our country. For them, it seems as a standard. But seen from a global supply chain perspective, it is not. It is anything but a standard.
Agreed. It's true. We've been looking at this very much from a US perspective. And this is because we've so far been operating as US customs brokers. And the standards across countries do vary greatly. It makes me think that every person that we deal with does bring their own perspective to the table, and a big part of the challenge is trying to organize information so that an exporter in Germany can understand what the needs are of an importer in the US. Hopefully, this is something that in the future we can help facilitate so that it becomes a less complicated issue for everyone involved. Roger, Lars, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This has been really interesting. Look forward to speaking with you both again.